Chapter 21 Into the Heart. Tyran nobility filled the great vaulted chamber with its huge polished redstone columns 10 feet thick, rising into shadowed heights above golden lamps hanging on golden chains. The high lords and ladies were arrayed in a thick hollow circle under the great dome at the chamber's heart, with the lesser nobles ranked behind, row on row, back into the forest of columns, all in their best velvets and silks and laces, wide sleeves and ruffed collars and peaked hats, all murmuring uneasily so the towering ceiling echoed the sounds of nervous geese. Only the high lords themselves had ever before been bidden to this place, called the Heart of the Stone, and they had come only 4 times a year, at the twin demands of law and custom. They came now, all who were not out in the countryside somewhere, at the summons of their new lord, the maker of law and breaker of custom. The packed crowd gave way before Moiraine as soon as they saw who she was, so she and Egwene moved in a pocket of open space. Lan's absence irritated Moiraine. It was not like the man to vanish when she might need him. His way usually was to watch over her as if she could not fend for herself without a guardian. Had she not been able to feel the bond linking them and known he could not be very far from the stone, she might have worried. He fought the strings Nynaeve was tying to him as hard as he had ever fought the Trollocs in the Blight, but much as he might deny it, that young woman had bound him as tightly as she herself did, though in other ways. He might as well try tearing steel with his hands as those ties. She was not jealous exactly, but Lan had been her sword arm, her shield and companion for too many years for her to give him up lightly. "I have done what had to be done there. She will have him if I die, and not before. Where is the man? What is he doing?" One red-gowned, lace-ruffed woman, a horse-faced lady of the land called Laetha, drew her skirts away a bit too assiduously, and Moiraine looked at her. Merely looked, without slowing her step, but the woman shuddered and dropped her eyes. Moiraine nodded to herself. She could accept that these people hated Aes Sedai, but she would not endure open rudeness on top of veiled slights. Besides, the rest shied back another step after seeing Laetha face down. "Are you certain he said nothing of what he means to announce?" she asked quietly. In this gabble, no one 3 paces away could have made out a word. The Tyrans kept about that distance now. She did not like being overheard. "Nothing," Egwene said just as softly. She sounded as irritated as Moiraine felt. "There have been rumors."
"Rumors? What sort of rumors?"
The girl was not that good at controlling her face and voice. Clearly, she had not heard the tales of doings in the Two Rivers. Betting that Rand had not, though, might be putting her horse at a 10-foot fence.
"You should bring him to confide in you. He needs an active ear. It will help him to talk out his troubles with someone he can trust."
Egwene gave her a sidelong glance. She was becoming too sophisticated for such simple methods. Still, Moiraine had spoken unadorned truth. The boy did need someone to listen, and by listening lighten his burdens, and it might work.
"He will not confide in anyone, Moiraine. He hides his pains and hopes he can deal with them before anyone notices."
Anger flashed across Egwene's face.
"The wool-brained mule!"
Moiraine felt a momentary sympathy. The girl could not be expected to accept Rand strolling about arm in arm with Elaine, kissing in corners where they thought themselves unseen. And Egwene did not know the half yet. Commiseration did not last. There was too much of importance to deal with for the girl to be fretting over what she could not have in any case. Elaine and Nynaeve should be aboard the Raker by now, out of the way. Their voyage might eventually tell her if her suspicions about the Windfinders were correct. That was a minor point, though. At worst, the pair had enough gold to buy a ship and hire a crew, which might be necessary given the rumors of Tanchico, with enough left for the bribes so often necessary with Tarabonner officials. Tom Merrillin's room was empty, and her informants had reported him muttering about Tanchico on his way out of the stone. He would see they got a good crew and found the right officials. The purported plan with Mazrim Time was much the more likely of the two,
but her messages to the Ammerlin should have taken care of that. The two young women could handle the much less likely eventuality of a mysterious danger hidden in Tanchico, and they were out of her hair and away from Rand. She only regretted that Egwene had refused to go with them. Tarvalin would have been best for all three, but Tanchico would do. "Speaking of wool-brained, do you mean to continue with this plan to go into the waste?" "I do," the girl said firmly. She needed to be back in the tower, training her strength. What was Swan thinking of? She will probably give me one of those sayings about boats and fish when I can ask her. At least Egwene would be out of the way, too, and the Aiel girl would look after her. Perhaps the Wise Ones really could teach her something of dreaming. That had been the most astounding letter from them, not that she could afford to heed most of it. Egwene's journey into the waste might be useful in the long run. The last line of Tyrann's gave way, making a little hollow, and she and Egwene faced the open area under the vast dome. The noble's ill-ease was most evident here. Many studied their feet like sulky children, and others stared at nothing, looking at anything but where they were. Here was where Kalendor had been kept before Rand took it. Here beneath this dome, untouched by any hand for more than 3,000 years, untouchable by any hand but that of the dragon reborn. Tyrants did not like admitting that the heart of the stone existed. "Poor woman," Egwene murmured. Moiraine followed the girl's gaze. The High Lady Altima, already gowned and ruffed and capped in shimmering white, as Tyran widows were, though her husband still lingered, was perhaps the most composed of all the nobles. She was a slender, lovely woman, made more so by her small, sad smile, with large brown eyes and long black hair hanging halfway to her waist. A tall woman, though Moiraine admitted she did tend to judge such things by her own height, and rather too full-bosomed. Kyrianen were not a tall people, and she had been considered short even among them. "Yes, a poor woman," she said, but she did not mean it for sympathy. It was good to see Egwene had not yet grown sophisticated enough to see beneath the surface all the time. The girl was already far less malleable than she should have been for years yet. She needed to be shaped before she was hardened. Tom had missed with Altima, or perhaps he had not wanted to see. He seemed to have a strange reluctance to move against women. The High Lady Altima was far more dangerous than her husband or her lover, both of whom she had manipulated without either knowing it. Perhaps more dangerous than anyone else in Tyr, man or woman. She would find others to use soon enough. It was Altima's style to remain in the background and pull strings. Something would have to be done about her. Moiraine shifted her gaze along the rows of high lords and ladies until she found Estanda in brocaded yellow silks with a large ivory lace ruff and a tiny matching cap. A certain sternness marred the beauty of her face, and the occasional glances she gave Altima were iron hard. Feelings between the two went beyond mere rivalry. Had they been men, one would have shed the other's blood in a duel years since. If that antagonism could be sharpened, Altima would be too busy to make trouble for Rand. For an instant, she regretted sending Tom away. She did not like having to waste her time with these petty affairs. But he had too much influence with Rand. The boy had to depend on her counsel. Hers and hers alone. The Light knew he was difficult enough without interference. Tom had been settling the boy down to rule Tyr when he needed to be moving on to greater things. But that was dealt with for now. The problem of bringing Tom Merrillan to heel could be managed later. Rand was the dilemma now. What did he mean to announce? Where is he? He has learned the first art of kings, it seems, making people wait. She did not realize she had spoken aloud until Egwene gave her a startled look. She smoothed the irritation from her face immediately. Rand would appear eventually, and she would learn what he meant to do. Learn along with everyone else. She nearly ground her teeth. That blind fool of a boy, running headlong through the night with never a care for cliffs, never thinking he could carry the world over as well as himself. If only she could keep him from rushing back to save his village. He would want to, but he could not afford to do so now. Perhaps he did not know. It could be hoped. Matt stood across from them, uncombed and slouching, with his hands in the pockets of his high-collared green coat. It was half unbuttoned as usual, and his boots were scuffed, in sharp contrast to the precise elegance around him. He shifted nervously as he saw her looking at him, then gave one of his rudely defiant grins. At least he was here, under her eye. Matt Coffin was an exhausting young man to keep track of, avoiding her spies with ease. He never gave any sign that he knew they were there, but her eyes and ears reported that he seemed to slide out of sight whenever they got too close. "I think he sleeps in his coats," Egwene said disapprovingly. "On purpose. I wonder where Perrin is." She went on tiptoes, trying to search over the heads of the assemblage. "I don't see him." Frowning, Moiraine scanned the crowd, not that she could make out much beyond the front row. Lan could have been back among the columns. She would not strain, though, or jump up on her toes like an anxious child. Lan was due a talking to he would not soon forget when she laid hands on him. With Nynaeve tugging at him one way, and Taviren, Rand at least, seemingly pulling another, she sometimes wondered how well their bond still held. At least his time with Rand was useful. It gave her another string to the young man. "Perhaps he is with Fael," Egwene said. "He won't have run away, Moiraine. Perrin has a strong sense of duty." Almost as strong as a warder's, Moiraine knew, which was why she did not keep eyes and ears on him, as she tried to with Matt. "Fael has been trying to talk him into leaving, girl. Quite possibly he was with her. He usually was. Do not look so surprised. They often talk and argue where they can be overheard." "I'm not surprised, you know," Egwene said dryly. "Only that Fael would try to talk him out of what he knows he has to do. Perhaps she does not believe it as he does." Moiraine had not believed it herself at first, had not seen it. 3 Taviren, all the same age, coming out of one village. She must have been blind not to realize they had to be connected. Everything had become much more complicated with that knowledge. Like trying to juggle 3 of Tom's colored balls one-handed and blindfolded. She had seen Tom do that, but she would not want to try. There was no guide to how they were connected or what they were supposed to do. The prophecies never mentioned companions. "I like her," Egwene said. "She is good for him, just what he needs, and she cares for him deeply."
"I suppose she does."
If Fael became too troublesome, Moiraine would have to have a talk with her about the secrets Fael had been keeping from Perrin, or have one of her eyes and ears do it. That should settle her down. "You say it as if you don't believe it. They love each other, Moiraine. Can't you see that? Can't you even recognize a human emotion when you see one?" Moiraine gave her a firm look, one that settled her on her heels in a satisfactory manner. The girl knew so little and thought she knew so much. Moiraine was about to tell her so in withering fashion when startled, even fearful gasps rose from among the Tyrans. The crowd gave way hurriedly, more than eagerly, those in front ruthlessly forcing those behind farther back, opening a wide passage to the space beneath the dome. Rand strode down that corridor, looking straight ahead, imperious in a red coat embroidered with golden scrolls up his sleeves, cradling Kalendor in his right arm like a scepter. It was not only he that made the Tyrans give way, though. Behind him came perhaps 100 Aiel, spears and arrow-nocked bows in hand, shufa wrapped around their heads, black veils hiding everything but their eyes. Moiraine thought she recognized Ruark at the front, just behind Rand, but only by the way he moved. They were anonymous, ready for killing. Plainly, whatever he meant to say, Rand intended to quell any resistance before it had a chance to coalesce. The Aiel halted, but Rand kept on until he stood centered under the dome, then ran his eye around the gathering. He seemed surprised, and perhaps upset, at the sight of Egwene, but he gave Moiraine an infuriating smile, and Matt one that made the pair of them look like boys when Matt returned it. The Tyrans were white-faced, not knowing whether to stare at Rand and Kalendor or the veiled Aiel. Either could be death in their midst.
"The High Lord Sunamon," Rand said suddenly and loudly, making that plump fellow jump,
"has guaranteed me a treaty with Mayen, strictly following lines I gave him. He has guaranteed this with his life." He laughed as if he had made a joke, and most of the nobles laughed with him. Not Sunamon, who looked distinctly ill. "If he fails," Rand announced, "he has agreed to be hanged, and he will be obliged." The laughter stopped. Sunamon's face took on a sickly tinge of green. Egwene gave Moiraine a troubled glance. She was gripping her skirt with both hands. Moiraine only waited. He had not brought every noble within 10 miles together to tell them of a treaty or threaten a fat fool. She made her hands let go of her own skirts. Rand turned in a circle, weighing the faces he saw. "Because of this treaty, ships will soon be available to carry Tyran grain west to find new markets." There were a few appreciative murmurs at that, quickly stifled. "But there is more. The armies of Tyr are to march." A cheer rose, tumultuous shouts ringing from the ceilings. Men capered, even the high lords, and shook their fists over their heads and tossed up peaked velvet hats. Women, smiling as rapturously as the men, bestowed kisses on the cheeks of those who would go to war and delicately sniffed the tiny porcelain bottles of smelling salts no Tyran noblewoman would be without, pretending to be made faint by the news. "Ilion shall fall," someone cried, and hundreds of voices seized it like thunder. "Ilion shall fall! Ilion shall fall! Ilion shall fall!" Moiraine saw Egwene's lips moving, the words crushed beneath the jubilation. She could read them, though. "No, Rand, please, no, please don't." On the far side of Rand, Matt was frowning in disapproving silence. They and she were the only ones not celebrating, aside from the ever-watchful Aiel and Rand himself. Rand's smile was twisted contemptuously and never touched his eyes. There was fresh sweat on his face. She met his sardonic stare and waited. There would be more, and not, she suspected, to her liking. Rand raised his left hand. Slowly, quiet fell, those in front anxiously shushing those behind. He waited for absolute silence. "The armies will move north, into Kyrian. The High Lord Mylon will command, and under him the High Lords Gwayam, Aracome, Hearn, Maracon, and Simon. The armies will be generously financed by the High Lord Torian, the wealthiest of you, who will accompany the armies to see that his money is spent wisely." Dead silence greeted this pronouncement. No one moved, though plain-faced Torian seemed to be having trouble standing. Moiraine had to give Rand a mental bow for his choices. Sending those 7 out of Tyr neatly eviscerated the 7 most dangerous plots against him, and none of those men trusted each other enough to scheme among themselves. Tom Marilyn had given him good advice. Obviously her spies had missed some of the notes he had had slipped into Rand's pockets. But the rest? It was madness. He could not have had this for an answer on the other side of that Turangrial. It was not possible, surely. Mylon obviously agreed with her, if not for the same reasons. He stepped forward hesitantly, a lean, hard man, but so frightened that the whites of his eyes showed all the way around. "My Lord Dragon," he stopped, swallowed, and began again in a marginally stronger voice. "My Lord Dragon, intervening in a civil war is stepping into a bog. A 12 factions contend for the Sun Throne, with as many shifting alliances, each one betrayed every day. Besides that, bandits infest Kyrian as fleas on a wild boar. Starving peasants have stripped the land bare. I am reliably informed that they eat bark and leaves. My Lord Dragon, a quagmire barely begins to describe—" Rand cut him off.
You do not want to extend Tyr's sway all the way to Kinslayer's dagger, Mylon? That is all right. I know who I mean to sit on the Sun Throne. You do not go to conquer Mylon, but to restore order and peace, and to feed the hungry. There is more grain in the granaries now than Tyr could sell, and the farmers will harvest as much more this year unless you disobey me. Wagons will carry it north behind the armies, and those peasants. Those peasants will not have to eat bark any longer, my lord Mylon. The tall High Lord opened his mouth again, and Rand swung Kalandor down, grounding its crystal point in front of him. You have a question, Mylon? Shaking his head, Mylon backed into the crowd as though trying to hide.
I knew he would not start a war, Egwene said fiercely. I knew it!
You think there will be less killing in this? Moiraine muttered. What was the boy up to? At least he was not running off to save his village while the Forsaken had their way with the rest of the world. The corpses will be piled as high, girl. You will not know the difference between this and a war. Attacking Ilion and Samael would have gained him time, even if it grew into a stalemate. Time to learn his power, and perhaps to bring down one of his strongest enemies, to cow the rest. What did he gain by this? Peace for the land of her birth, starving Kyrianen fed. She would have applauded another time. It was laudably humane, and utterly senseless now. Useless bloodshed, rather than confronting an enemy who would destroy him given the slightest opening. Why? Lanfear. What had Lanfear said to him? What had she done? The possibilities chilled Moiraine's heart. Rand would take closer watching than ever now. She would not allow him to turn to the shadow. Ah, yes, Rand said, as if just remembering something. Soldiers don't know much about feeding hungry people, do they? For that, I think a kind woman's heart is needed. My Lady Altima, I regret intruding on your grief, but will you undertake to oversee distributing the food? You will have a nation to feed. And power to gain, Moiraine thought. This was his first slip, aside from deciding on Kyrian over Ilion, of course. Altima would certainly return to Tyr on an equal footing with Mylon or Gwayam, ready for more plotting. She would have Rand assassinated before that if he was not careful. Perhaps an accident could be arranged in Kyrian. Altima swept a graceful curtsy, spreading her full white skirts, only a touch of her surprise showing. As my Lord Dragon commands, so do I obey. It will please me greatly to serve the Lord Dragon. I was sure it would, Rand said wryly. As much as you love your husband, you'll not want him with you in Kyrian. Conditions will be hard for a sick man. I took the liberty of having him move to the High Lady Estanda's apartments. She will care for him while you are away, and send him to meet you in Kyrian when he is well. Estanda smiled, a tight smile of triumph. Altima's eyes rolled back in her head, and she crumpled in a heap. Moiraine shook her head slightly. He truly was harder than he had been, more dangerous. Egwene started toward the fallen woman, but Moiraine put a hand on her arm. I think she was only overcome by emotion. I can recognize it, you see. The ladies are tending her. Several of them had clustered around, patting Altima's wrists and passing smelling salts under her nose. She coughed and opened her eyes and looked ready to faint again when she saw Estanda standing over her. Rand just did something very clever, I think, Egwene said in a flat voice. And very cruel. He has a right to look ashamed. Rand did look at it that, grimacing at the floor stones under his boots. Perhaps he was not as hard as he was trying to be. Not undeserved, however, Moiraine observed. The girl showed promise, picking up on what she did not understand. But she still needed to learn to control her emotions, to see what had to be done as well as she saw what she wished could be done. Let us hope he is finished with being clever for today. Very few in the great chamber understood exactly what had happened, only that Altima's fainting had upset the Lord Dragon. A few in the back raised shouts of, "Kyrian shall fall," but the cry did not take hold.
"With you to lead us, my lord dragon, we shall conquer the world," a lumpy-faced young man shouted, half-supporting Torian. Estian, Torian's eldest son. The lumpy-faced resemblance was clear, though the father was still mumbling to himself. Jerking his head up, Rand appeared startled, or perhaps angry.
"I will not be with you. I am going away for a time."
That certainly brought silence again. Every eye was on him, but his attentions were all on Kalendor. The crowd flinched as he lifted the crystal blade before his face. Sweat rolled down his face, much more sweat than before.
"The stone held Kalendor before I came. The stone should hold it again until I return."
Suddenly, the transparent sword blazed in his hands. Whirling it hilt uppermost, he drove it down, into the stone floor. Bluish lightning arced wildly toward the dome above. The stone rumbled loudly, and the stone shook, dancing, heaving, screaming people from their feet. Moiraine pushed Egwene off of her while tremors still reverberated through the chamber and scrambled erect. What had he done? And why? Going away? It was the worst of all her nightmares. The Aiel had already regained their feet. Everyone else lay stunned or huddled on hands and knees, except for Rand. He was on one knee, both hands holding Kalendor's hilt, with the blade driven halfway into the floorstones. The sword was clear crystal again. Sweat glistened on his face. He pried his hands away, one finger at a time, held them cupped around the hilt, yet not touching it. For a moment, Moiraine thought he was going to take hold of it again, but instead he forced himself to his feet. He did have to force himself, she was certain of it.
"Look at this while I'm gone."
His voice was lighter, more the way it had been when she first found him in his village, but no less sure or firm than it had been moments before.
"Look at it, and remember me. Remember I will come back for it. If anyone wants to take my place, all they have to do is pull it out."
He waggled a finger at them, grinning almost mischievously. "But remember the price of failure." Turning on his heel, he marched out of the chamber, the Aiel falling in behind him. Staring at the sword rising out of the floor of the heart, the Tyrans got to their feet more slowly. Most looked ready to run, but too frightened to.
"That man," Egwene grumbled, dusting off her green linen dress. "Is he mad?"
She clapped a hand to her mouth.
"Oh, Moiraine, he isn't, is he? Is he? Not yet."
"The light Sendi is not," Moiraine muttered. She could not take her eyes from the sword any more than the Tyrans could.
"The light take the boy."
Why could he not have remained the amenable youngling she had found in Emmon's field? She made herself start after Rand.
"But I will find out."
Half running, they caught up quickly in a broad, tapestry-lined hallway. The Aiel, veils hanging loose now but easily raised if needed, moved aside without slowing. They glanced at her and at Egwene, hard faces unchanging but eyes touched by the wariness Aiel always had around Aes Sedai. How they could be uneasy at her while calmly following Rand, she did not understand. Learning more than fragments about them was difficult. They answered questions freely, about anything that was of no interest to her. Her informants and her own eavesdropping overheard nothing, and her network of eyes and ears would no longer try. Not since one woman had been found left bound and gagged, hanging by her ankles from battlements and staring wild-eyed at the 400-foot drop beneath her, and not since the man who had simply disappeared. The man was just gone. The woman, refusing to go higher than the ground floor, had been a constant reminder until Moiraine sent her into the country. Rand did not slow down any more than the Aiel when she and Egwene fell in on either side of him. His glance was wary, too, but in a different way, and touched with exasperated anger.
"I thought you were gone," he said to Egwene. "I thought you went with Elaine and Nynaeve. You should have. Even Tanchico is... Why did you stay?"
"I won't be staying much longer," Egwene said. "I'm going to the waste with Avienda.
to Roedion, to study with the wise ones.
He missed a step as the girl mentioned the waste, glancing at her uncertainly, then strode on. He seemed composed now, too much so, a boiling tea kettle with the lid strapped down and the spout plugged.
"Do you remember swimming in the Waterwood?" he said quietly. "I used to float on my back in a pool and think the hardest thing I'd ever have to do was plow a field, unless maybe it was shearing sheep. Shearing from sunup till bedtime, hardly stopping to eat until the clip was in."
"Spinning," Egwene said. "I hated it worse than scrubbing floors. Twisting the threads made your fingers so sore."
"Why did you do it?" Moiraine demanded, before they could go on with this childhood reminiscing.
He gave her a sidelong look and a smile mocking enough to belong to Matt.
"Could I really have hung her for trying to kill a man who was plotting to kill me? Would there be more justice in that than in what I did?"
The grin slid from his face. "Is there justice in anything I do? Sunamon will hang if he fails, because I said so. He'll deserve it after the way he's tried to take advantage, with never a care if his own people starved, but he'll not go to the gallows for that. He will hang because I said he would. Because I said it."
Egwene laid a hand on his arm, but Moiraine would not allow him to sidestep.
"You know that this is not what I mean."
He nodded. This time his smile had a frightening rictus quality.
"Kalendor. With that in my hands, I can do anything. Anything. I know I can do anything. But now it's a weight off my shoulders. You don't understand, do you?"
She did not, though it nettled her that he saw it. She kept silent, and he went on.
"Perhaps it will help if you know it comes from the prophecies." Into the heart he thrusts his sword. Into the heart, to hold their hearts. Who draws it out shall follow after. What hand can grasp that fearful blade? You see? Straight from the prophecies.
"You forget one thing," she told him tightly.
"You drew Kalendor in fulfillment of prophecy. The safeguards that held it awaiting you for 3,000 years and more are gone. It is the sword that cannot be touched no longer. I could channel it free myself. Worse, any of the Forsaken could. What if Lanfear returns? She could use Kalendor no more than I, but she could take it."
He did not react to the name, because he did not fear her, in which case he was a fool, or for another reason.
"If Samael or Ravin or any male Forsaken puts his hand on Kalendor, he can wield it as well as you. Think of facing the power you give up so casually. Think of that power in the hands of the Shadow."
"I almost hope they'll try."
A threatening light shone in his eyes. They seemed gray storm clouds. "There is a surprise awaiting anyone who tries to channel Kalendor out of the stone, Moiraine. Do not think of taking it to the tower for safekeeping. I could not make the trap pick and choose. The power is all it needs to spring and reset, ready to trap again. I am not giving Kalendor up forever. Just until I..." He took a deep breath. "Kalendor will stay there until I come back for it. By being there, reminding them of who I am and what I am, it makes sure I can come back without an army, a haven of sorts, with the likes of Altima and Sunamon to welcome me home. If Altima survives the justice her husband and Astanda will mete out, and Sunamon survives mine. Light. What a wretched tangle." He could not make it selective? Or would not? She was determined not to underrate what he might be capable of. Kalendor belonged in the tower, if he would not wield it as he should, in the tower till he would wield it. Just until what? He had been intending to say something other than, "until I come back," but what?
"And where are you going? Or do you mean to keep it a mystery?"
She was quietly vowing not to let him escape again, to turn him somehow if he meant to go running off to the Two Rivers when he surprised her. "Not a mystery, Moiraine. Not from you and Egwene, anyway."
He looked at Egwene and said one word. "Roedion." Wide-eyed, the girl appeared as astounded as if she had never heard the name before. For that matter, Moiraine felt scarcely less.
There was a murmur among the Aiel, but when she glanced back, they were striding along with no expression whatsoever. She wished she could make them leave, but they would not go at her command, and she would not ask Rand to send them away. It would not help her with him to ask favors, especially when he might well refuse. "You are not an Aiel clan chief, Rand," she said firmly, "and have no need to be one. Your struggle is on this side of the Dragon Wall. Unless... does this come from your answers in the Turangrial? Kyrian and Kalandor and Roydian? I told you those answers can be cryptic. You could be misunderstanding them, and that could prove fatal. To more than you." "You must trust me, Moiraine, as I have so often had to trust you." His face might as well have belonged to an Aiel for all she could read in it. "I will trust you for now. Just do not wait to seek my guidance until it is too late. I will not let you go to the shadow. I have worked too long to allow that, whatever it takes."